Hello, and it's the Carnival of Bastards, the show where it has two raving maniac Australian fans who piss the take out of every show because they love it so much. My name is David Innes.
My name is St. John Carp.
And there's been all sorts of things going on recently, from DVD releases to, of course, the recent Christmas special. And what would you like to discuss first?
Well, how about we start with the Christmas special? That's a fun one.
Yes, I loved it.
Me too, actually. Is it just me or has Stephen Moffat finally figured out how to pace something so that it's not this hectic, frenetic, insane thing with 10 million things happening at the same time? He's finally figured out how to slow it down and actually develop a frickin' plot.
Well, there is. I mean, I was listening to I was reading a lot of criticism that basically there's more plot than character development. And look, I'll argue that. However, I just found that this one was a particularly enjoyable romp. Maybe me as the classic fan having, you know, needing some kind of mop for the amount of squee that was needed when it was revealed about the great intelligence. I was.
Oh, yes.
And I was most delighted. And, you know, as someone quite rightly pointed out, Clara is a generic Moffat companion girl, you know, feisty, talk back at seas sort of character. But I still like her. I thought she was great.
Well, that's because Moffat can't write women.
Well,
he's the Terry Nation of modern Doctor Who.
Yes.
However, it was a great story. I do have to agree. And I don't mind that there wasn't so much character development and it was more plot. You know, it worked, and Doctor Who's never been Downton Abbey.
Well, yes, but, I mean, compared to stories of the past where you get lots of character development, it is nice to occasionally have that, and I understand that there wasn't so much here. I still enjoyed it, and I have to say I loved having comedy Santarans. It's great.
That wasn't bad. You know, I feel like the Christmas episode was pitched more towards a younger audience, but, you know, it works, it's good, and it is Doctor Who, so you can't complain too much about it not being adult enough. And, of course, it's the Christmas episode.
Well, clearly, therefore, I'm an immature perturb, because
I giggled as well. I laughed.
I thought it was delightful. I think my favourite moments was the whole routine with the memory worm. Loved it.
Yes. That was extremely clever. And I do like how the memory worm came back and wound up being part of the story as well.
Well, it had to be. It couldn't have been just a throwaway thing.
It was a good hour and 20 minutes. Like, it was nearly movie length. So they could have had a number of throwaway things.
It was only an hour.
Was it?
Yeah.
Oh, I must have watched it with commercials. Okay. I watched it on BBC America, and I hope they didn't cut anything out of it, because they've been rerunning the Christmas specials earlier in the day from past years, and they cut the buggery out of those. Every bit of comedy, every bit of character development, gone.
That's weird. It wouldn't have been cut, I don't think, especially if it was an hour and 20 minutes. It would have been with ads, but someone had kindly uploaded the entire thing as one YouTube video, so I was most grateful for them.
God bless the internet and its multitudinous pirates.
Yes, although of course it was also broadcast here on Boxing Day as well, so you know.
But you're not one to be left behind, are you?
No, I sort of got up in the afternoon and went, gotta watch it, eat the pudding. So I was most pleased, especially after last Christmas was so wet.
I know, I was very, very relieved we didn't have a repeat.
Well, although you still got that dreadful line, the only thing that can melt snow is tears at Christmas.
It was beautiful corn, and seriously, I will take that corn over the giant fucking Cyberman in, was it Age of Steel?
No, the next Doctor.
The next Doctor,
about.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I have no memory for these things.
You're weakening, young Skywalker. You're weakening.
You're weak and not worthy of this podcast. Get out.
Get out. Out! Why must you turn this podcast into a house of mediocrity?
It's where I live.
Yes, well, get out. So, yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I was talking to a friend of mine, Rob, He's a very anti-Tennant person, but I have to say, I don't mind Christmas specials. Generally, I think that they've been all right. I'm one of the few people who love Voyage of the Damned. I liked
Voyage of the Damned.
I did too. I know it has its soppy moments, and I know there's moments which is just purest ham, but I loved it. It was just great. I did thoroughly enjoy it.
That's one of the ones they cut the buggery out of. I really liked the character of Mr. Copper, the guy with the degree in Earthonomics who gets all of his Earth facts wrong. And yeah. Pretty much every scene he has, they cut.
Well, I think that one, probably the reason for that is because that one was horrendously overtime. If I'm not much mistaken, that was like 70-odd minutes. That's a huge episode.
I think they wanted them to run to an hour each, plus ads, so they had to cut something.
Oh, well.
Wankers. I thought this was the whole point of cable, that you can watch it with fewer commercials and uncut.
Well, I think you need to write to your local member and say, "Dear sir, I am appalled at your concept of cable TV. Regards, Lord Bombosity."
Local member, I'm going to write straight to the governor. He needs to hear about this.
That's right.
Bring me Barack. Where is Barack?
It's not like The Simpsons when you go to see, take this all the way to the Prime Minister.
Oi, Mr. Prime Minister.
Hey, Andy. What's a good word? An accurate depiction of politics in Australia. Yes.
Mister, it's an emergency.
I would have called them Chazwazzers.
Thank you.
Yes, so in the end, I loved it, especially compared to last Christmas special, which was awful.
Absolutely. I seem to remember A Christmas Carol from 2 years ago was pretty good, though.
Yes, it was. I remember drinking a lot whilst watching that.
We also drank a lot while watching last year's one as well.
We did, and that didn't help. But The Christmas Carol is still great. I remember watching that again and loving it, so... Clearly, we needed more potent drinks. I don't know. I was shocked at people who liked Last Christmas Special. I was like, "What? Who are you? What are you?"
Yeah, people who've been dropped on their head.
Well, quite possibly.
Or they've been drinking gin, which has much the same effect.
Well, there is also that. And for these people, I think they do drink gin, so you know that's a thing. But I had to say, I love the new TARDIS interior as well.
I know, it looks great, and the opening credits are fun too, but the new TARDIS interior is very good.
Oh yes, I'll get onto the title sequence shortly, but yes, I loved it for a few reasons. One, it had a lot of the 1980s console sounds, which made me so happy, and the fact that it looks like a console room now rather than sort of the Wonderland as it had been previously, and I really like the look of it. My favourite moment, again, this is just me as a predictable sob or whatever else, is when he goes in and he switches the lights on and it has the I Am the Doctor music, and it's just like, it made me very happy.
Yeah, I think the last TARDIS interior was less Wonderland and more Neverland Ranch. You know, you get invited into this room by a strange man with candy, and you don't know what's going to go on.
I wouldn't have said that, but sure. It has
a honeymoon suite.
Well, does it? No,
I'm pretty sure Amy and Rory sleep in some kind of honeymoon suite. They specifically ask him for their own bedroom without bunk beds.
That's one of my favorite lines. But you've got a bed with a ladder.
Well, I have been watching a bunch of old Russell T. Davies, David Tennant era episodes, and I'm getting kind of nostalgic, you know, especially because I'm finishing up The Writer's Tale as well.
Ah, yes.
Which is a spectacular book.
I'm so glad you like it, because I knew when you first started reading it, you were dying on the inside.
Was I? What did I say?
Oh, you were talking about, like, you would have hate, it made you... awful to be a, you know, feeling for a writer, because I know how much you've written and you're a prolific writer, and you would have hate to have someone completely, you know, put a big red X to your script and go, "No, I'm going to rewrite all of your things."
Oh yeah, that would be quite painful, but Davies did know what he was doing, and, you know, if he did put a big X through someone's script, then it was probably for the best. But Davies is quite interesting as a writer, though, because he seems to have left everything to the last minute, partly because that was his writing style and partly because he had a massively overloaded schedule. But leaving everything to the last minute means that all of the episodes we now consider classic were sort of done the night before.
Well, yeah, I think, if I'm not much mistaken, Midnight was certainly a case like that. But I don't know if you got to the part of the book. One of the most fascinating things, and this is why I completely and utterly, wholeheartedly support Russell T. and his massive rewriting, was the start of Fires of Pompeii.
Yeah, I read that. He really worked wonders on that, you're right.
The original is just ass, and then you read the rewrite, you see the final product, and you go, oh, no, this is much better. But yeah, Midnight, I think, was just like, you know, one of those moments of stroke of genius where you just went tap-dee-tap-tap-tap, and you get one of the greatest episodes ever. I love Midnight.
It is very good. It's incredibly gritty.
It is, and it's really frightening. It's actually, I remember first watching it feeling, oh my god, this is such an ordeal. You know, at the end of it, you just feel like you need a stiff drink because you've just gone through that.
You need a stiff drink and a good stabbing knife.
Yeah, well, yes, everything's better with a good stabbing knife.
Free in every show bag.
Yes. Yes, go to the Royal Show. Get your stabbing knife show bag. Everyone wants
Is that part of the Whiz Fizz show bag or the Licorice show bag?
That's probably part of the Birdie Beetle show bag.
Yes. The bag with the most chocolate but the least quality.
I liked Birdie Beetles.
Oh, they were foul, festy things with little rice bubbles or something in them.
I loved Birdie Beetles and... and
it's shoveling low-grade, you know, street sweeper quality chocolate into your gob.
Because you couldn't get it anywhere else. That's why I loved it so much.
Nobody else sells Birdie Beetles. They haven't been made in 20 years. The last time they were manufactured was the 1980s. They've just got huge storerooms full of them that they say, quickly, quickly, put them in fucking show bags because we can't get rid of them any other way.
Well, that's what I presume. That's why, you know, you always want the Birdie Beetle show bag, because you can't get Birdie Beetles elsewhere.
There's a reason you can't get them anywhere else. They went out of business because even children wouldn't stick them up their ass.
Well, that's not exactly where I'd put them, but, you know, whatever floats your boat.
Well, they'll work your way up to your mouth eventually.
In a wonderful chocolate vomit. And I'm sure we've just alienated 90% of the audience with the concept of the Bertie Beetle. But let's just say it's a wonderful Australian treat that I loved. Sinjin clearly thinks is awful. But then again, who knows? We both love Curly Whirlies. And I remember our test audience subjects did not enjoy the Curly Whirlies.
Oh, underwhelmed. Massively underwhelmed. I don't know what's wrong with him. He's not getting any of my Curly Whirlies, that's for sure.
Next time I've come across, this is one thing, being home at Christmas, you wouldn't believe how much I miss being over in the US for not only the heat, but just realizing I'm home going, I could be overseas right now.
Well, next time you do venture up in this direction, I have discovered a mere 4 or 5 blocks from my house is a British goods store with a free Doctor Who pinball machine from the 80s.
Good lord!
I know! So you're in there tapping away as the 7th Doctor and, you know, scoring Daleks and Masters, and I don't know how pinball works, but, you know, it's all there.
I'm sure you've read the theory of pinball somewhere. Yes.
Huh, look, sounds easy enough to play. Let's see how this works then.
Were you just rolling fat people off a cliff? Is that what that was?
That's exactly the noise that fat people off cliffs make. I'm fairly sure that's a TARDIS sound effect at some point.
The fat people over the cliff button.
And back to Voyage of the Damned.
Actually, brief pause while I say, I love the new title sequence and nearly lost my shit seeing Matt Smith's face in the title sequence.
That was very good. Actually, that's one of the few times that having the face in the opening credits has been done in a semi-classy way, because it's usually just, BAM! Actor face! And you kind of have to deal with it whether you like it or not.
I'm sorry. Give it to me straight, Doctor. I'm sorry. You've got a horrible case of actor face.
Yes. Is there any known cure? Unemployment.
The face in the title sequence only ever works in the classic series when if you're like me and you're made entirely out of sad and lonely, you'll watch a lot of the YouTube fan-made title sequences and they all have faces in them and they look awful! Mm. Awful!
Well, so did certain ones in the old series, like, you know, shoving Colin Baker's gigantic face onto the opening credits, or Peter Davison's fey, feckless, whimsy-filled blonde locks. It works great for someone like Patrick Troughton, who's got a very deeply lined, weather-beaten face, and it sort of fades into the effect of the time vortex. That worked great, but, you know...
I feel this is less about title sequences and more about your insipid hatred of actors.
I don't hate Colin Baker. I hate Peter... And I don't hate Peter Davison either. Peter Davison was miscast, and Colin Baker was given a really shit job to do.
I don't know if this is a cockroach or a cricket that's landed on the table. How creepy.
Put it in the opening titles.
Cockroach face.
Colin Baker's come back to play the role, I see.
Wah, wah.
Well, while we're on the snowman, I really need to go back and watch the recons of, Web of Fear and the Abominable Snowman now.
Yeah, actually, I wouldn't mind watching Web of Fear again. I don't think I've ever seen it. I know I've listened to them. I've heard them both on audio, but I've never watched the recons of either. Funny enough, actually, in the credits, Mervyn Haseman and Henry Lincoln aren't credited.
Well, they didn't... The only thing they said was great intelligence. They didn't really link it too heavily with old episodes.
Yeah, well, that's true, but it is still one of their... It's an implied creation. But, I mean, normally they're very good with that, and they didn't mention Robert Holmes' Centaurans or Malcolm Hugh's Silurians. I believe... Oh, when was the last time? I think they mentioned Malcolm Hugh in A Good Man Goes to War, but they don't mention him in Cold Blood. Or is it the other way around?
Did they mention him when they brought in the Macra in Gridlock? Oh, did they mention the writer, I mean?
I have a feeling yes. If you look, you might have to look through your credits of that. I'm pretty sure Macra said Macra by Ian Stuart Black.
Good work. I remember him from the cover of the Target novelization, but I couldn't have told you who'd written the TV story.
Right. Well, yes. Well, that's just one of those sad, lonely facts that I have. But, title sequence, loved. I really love the new version of the theme. I think it's great. I think it's great to have a brand new look at it. But yes, go back to Christmas specials of the past, or particularly the Russell T Davies era, and feeling nostalgic. I remember trying to pinpoint what it is that I disliked about Series 5, the first of the Moffat series. And I remember going back to watch The Unicorn and the Wasp, which I think is a phenomenal story. And I think I found the reason was that there was a lack of the unimportant person being important, and also it looks glossier. The Unicorn and the Wasp looked a lot brighter and more colourful, and whereas the direction that had been taken in that first season of Moffat's reign was very bland and washed out colours from my memory.
Well, yeah, I mean, Stephen Moffat hits the mill very hard for their sort of ethereal blue light, which is in every goddamn scene, whereas Russell T Davies had more actual stuff happening. Like, you can't have that ethereal blue light in, say, an Edwardian manor mystery. And I think you're absolutely right. You've mentioned this before, the unimportant person being made important, and that's absolutely right. You know, I was watching The End of Time and The Stolen Earth, and they're great, especially for the way that they make ordinary people like Wilfred and Donna important.
Oh, yes. I think it's incredibly important to have, because that represents us as the audience. We are those unimportant people. We want to be lifted up by this wonderful man. And I don't care how much mugs to camera. I don't care how many sort of sentimental speeches. I think he does a phenomenal job, Tennant especially. And it's wonderful. And that's what I really missed. However, having said that, having come into Series 7 now, I loved this whole season, and I think it's because everything's done right. Now we hit our straps. It's the equivalent, I think, to Season 4 of Russell T Davies, where we've now gotten to a point where we realise all the good things that David Tennant can do, how he acts, how he performs, blah, 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 and now we can play to the strengths.
I don't really feel like David Tennant had a downtime, though, whereas Moffat sort of has for the past 2 years or so.
If you look at Season 2, so the first season of David Tennant, it's a bit meh, to be honest.
Really? No, I really liked it.
Watching it again, there's a lot of meh moments. Maybe it's because I've watched it and rewatched it, I don't know. And Series 3 is alright, but I think Series 4 is brilliant.
Series 3 is all right.
Oh, dear.
I honestly believe Series 3 is the best series we've had of the new Doctor Who. Even though Martha is not the best companion, it's the best series we've had.
Yeah, I suppose.
You've got Family of Blood, that two-parter, that Human Nature. Yeah. You've got the finale with the Master, which is absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I think it's because I love Series 4 so much, apart from its finale. I love that season so much. I think it's reason why I'm not a huge Series 3 fan. I mean, I think it's still good. I think it's still better. I think it is each season progressed, they got better and better. And I think it's the same with Stephen Moffat. I think, Russell T took a while. Well, I mean, he was still really good from the day dot, but he improved over time, and I think Moffat is doing the same. Like, I've loved Asylum of the Daleks. I loved Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. I loved The Town Called Mercy. Power of Three was, it was all right. It wasn't overly great, but it was still fine. And I loved Angels Take Manhattan. So I think this is a sign of good things to come.
Well, I saw Neil Gaiman posting on his blog that he's writing another Doctor Who.
Oh, yes, I heard about that, yes. In fact, I actually thought, and knowing him, he'll take another spin on something. There's actually a story that the title has been released called The Journey to the Center of the TARDIS, which will be appearing next year. I thought that was going to be his episode, but it's not. It's written by some other bloke.
Hell damn, yes, that sounds exciting. We haven't actually explored the TARDIS in the new series.
No, apart from the Doctor's wife. Where we saw lots of corridors and old TARDIS rooms and the fact that it can change its gravity and so on.
Yes. What old TARDIS rooms did we see?
Oh, well, I saw the old console room. That's what I mean in particular.
Yes, yes.
Good lord, don't tell me you can't remember something from a year ago.
I honestly have absolutely no memory of what you're talking about. Oh, yes, no. Yes.
The last Neil Gaiman episode?
Yeah. But when you say old console room, that's just the David Tennant console room.
Well, yes, that's still the old console room.
Fuck off.
Well, it's the...
When you say old console room, I want to see either, the wooden Baroque one or, like, the 1980s console room. I don't want to have your pissy widdly David Tennant one, which they must have had, like, in a back closet somewhere.
I didn't think it was that pissy, and frankly, all right, I'm sorry, Mr. Pedantic, the previous console room then, for fuck's sake.
That's better. No, jeez. But a proper journey into the TARDIS, we've had a couple of these in the past, like in, well, dare I say, Invasion of Time.
Oh, God.
Yeah, I know. It's happened other times as well, surely Legopolis.
Oh, God.
You liked Legopolis, we watched it together.
Yes, I think it became more passable as I watched it.
Don't make me say the TV movie.
You just killed me on the inside. Like, funny enough, the only one I'm thinking of is The Edge of Destruction, not that I remember any of it.
Oh, yeah.
But I think primarily because I keep mixing up the TV story with the novelization.
Which was much, much better.
And the novelization is much more in depth, and they do travel really far into the TARDIS, if I seem to recall correctly, in the novelization. Because I remember talking about finding old paintings and finding the TARDIS walls are breathing and hissing or something like that.
Well, speaking of the TV movie, if I may.
All right.
Philip Sandifer has written some very interesting blog posts recently, one of which was a review of Longbarrow and one of which was a review of The Dying Days.
Right.
And for all our wonderful listeners out there in podcast land, Longbarrow was designed to finish their Seventh Doctor range and lead into the TV movie. And The Dying Days was designed to bridge the TV movie to the new range of BBC novels and Virgin's own Benny novels.
Mm.
He basically had the reverse reading of them that I did. I thought Longbarrow was great. I thought it answered all the questions about the Doctor's past and opened up a whole bunch more, because we'd sort of knew too much about him already. We needed to tie that up and broaden his mystery to make him a stranger character. And it did that brilliantly. And it had that sort of impossible checklist of continuity it had to deal with. Like the Five Doctors, it's that impossible checklist of stuff that you just can't do in one story. And they did it. It's great. The Dying Days, on the other hand, I have read it, and it's just the dullest, most pedestrian, most uninteresting Doctor Who novel. And Philip Sandifer seems to love it for some reason. I don't know why.
Yeah, but we're talking about a PhD person. We're talking about an academic. He tends to have reverse readings on most just to be for the point
no,
of it.
No, I don't think he's just being contrary. I think he's got...
Oh, come on.
I think
on.
He's got a lot of good points. No, I do.
I mean, come on. He's got his whole argument about Celestial Toymaker was that it's racist. I mean, for God's sake.
It is racist.
It's not that racist.
It's quite racist.
It's not that racist.
What he said was that the rest of the story didn't entertain him, whereas the rest of, say, Talons of Wang Chiang did.
No, oh, well, in any case, I have this inherent distrust of academics, so maybe that's me.
Well, now you do. You're a teacher.
Yes, but I'm not an academic.
You're a teacher. It's the same field.
No, it's... Oh, Bob, don't you ever compare me to people who waste their time. I always believe that Douglas Adams is right on the money, or, you know, Robert Hoe's right on the money with the idea of Time Lords being academics. That they just sit pompously in their studies and write pointless journals about, you know, why is God not a woman or something ridiculous like that.
With their very big hats.
And their enormous hats and collars. Although my job is to inspire and to, well, also to entertain in a way, but mainly to inspire. I can't stand people who get money just to write papers about things that aren't really all that important. Like, maybe it's just to me. Maybe, it's very important to them.
I see you more as the angry teacher rather than the inspirational teacher.
Oh, there's a lot of anger. I assure you there's a lot of anger.
Instead of the ending of Dead Poets Society, I see you standing over a bunch of cowering children with a giant cattle prod.
I'm not so much that. It's more that I'm angry about the world. Like, for instance, my students know full well about my hatred of A Current Affair and Today Tonight and anything like that, any sort of, you know, Fox News type programs, and I often frequently rant about them. So it's that sort of anger. I have mellowed a lot. I used to be a angry shouty McShoutpants. Now I'm just a shouty McShoutpants. But anyway, no, look, Philip Sandifer does make good points. I've actually been finding that his... Maybe it's because I had not a New Adventures reader, and I've just been finding his latest blog post going, possibly interesting. I've sort of tuned out a bit because I've just not been able to relate.
Well, he did the TV movie as well, which, of course, we've both seen.
I'd have to look at that because I haven't read it, because I saw his Lungbarrow one and trying to read through all his whatnots about that, and I thought, okay, rightio. But it's, I mean, some people can. I mean, I still think that Terrence Dix is the master of the checklist.
Oh yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's been done a couple of times, but I am now hellbent on rewatching the TV movie because I don't remember, and it wasn't good, but I don't remember it being as appalling as Sandifer made out.
It probably is.
Well, for example, he says that Grace's character changes from scene to scene, which, I don't know, I suppose I might have been too young at the time. It's why I need to rewatch it, but I'd be curious to take a look now with, you know, the adult glasses on.
That's a good point. I don't think I would have ever suggested that, although I...
Nobody has any cause to rewatch the TV movie ever.
That's true, but I remember watching a documentary about it, and I know the trouble that the writing went to. I think Jeffrey Sachs the writer or the director? Matthew somebody may have been the writer. Anyway, and basically having to chop and change everything, and basically having... Well, he had a checklist as well, from my memory. They had to get this, 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 and this all done in this one story. I mean, any story that's starts with a regeneration of the previous Doctor, it's like, oh, okay.
No, that wasn't bad. Like, that could have been done well. For old fans and for new fans, one of the things Philip Sandifer complained of was that to bring in new fans, you don't start by regenerating the previous Doctor. I disagree. I think it could be done. It just wasn't done well here.
Well, yes, I agree with you. I think that it brings the mythos of regeneration. I think that's a good point. Mm. But, yeah, I wouldn't have imagined anyone really hooking on from the TV series onwards. The other thing, if it was just that, perhaps, but then you had this whole business with the Master, about Gallifrey, about Scarra.
Yeah, that was a bit much. And the Doctor being half-human, that's the one thing I can't forgive. Whose idea was that?
Well, that was looking at the making of the film, and that was this whole different... Like, have you heard about what the TV movie was supposed to be about, or the American series was supposed to be about?
No, what was it?
Okay, so the idea was that the Doctor was supposed to be looking for his mother throughout all, and that she, you know, that she'd be lost in time or something like that, and that he had a mission from Barusa, and Barusa was, like, I think he was a voice in the TARDIS or something like that. He was like some sort of ethereal Time Lordy whatnot. Because I know that the original pitch to Fox was written from the point of view of Barusa. It was like this great big ancient tome business. And essentially, yeah, it was supposed to be this whole sort of mystic, lots of mystic Gallifrey ethos and whatnot.
Oh my god, thank fuck, that never got made. That sounds awful.
And how?
I honestly cannot conceive how you could so misunderstand the premise of Doctor Who to think that was a good idea.
It was written by an American.
Yeah, you don't say.
The original premise of the series was developed by, what's his face? Oh, kidding.
Philip Seagal?
Yeah, that's him. And so he wrote all that nonsense and then sort of gave this pilot to... I want to keep saying Jeffrey Sachs, but I'm pretty sure he's the director. Maybe it's Matthew somebody.
Well, I'm even angrier with the TV movie than now that I know what you've just told me. That is a whole bunch of shit sticks.
Isn't it just? And so it could have been really awful. And then, of course, a lot of that had to get diluted and cut out. I remember I was on YouTube. There's actually someone had uploaded about an hour and a half's worth of the studio tape, as in the studio filming of the TV movie. And although there's no sound in this particular section, there's a whole bunch of green screen, which I believe was some kind of dream sequence or some kind of mental telepathy sequence where the Doctor would have shown Grace Gallifrey.
Oh, okay. And is that not included on the DVD or...?
From memory? Maybe not. I'm not sure. But the full studio tape is on YouTube. But I don't know if anything's on the DVD.
Well, I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, but there's no sense. All you can see is just Paul McGann miming. And for some reason, he's holding a baby. I don't know why.
Oh, this just sounds awful. The more you tell me about this, the more I want to kill myself here, now, and with something horribly blunt and painful.
You welcome back to the Killing Yourself with a Blunt Object Hour. Today we have Sinjin. He's lost the will to live. He's just given birth to a trumpet.
Stick a mute in that, would you? But onto other things. Doctor Who, you say?
Yes, that. So there's, of course, DVD releases. I was actually looking at the trailer of Reign of Terror, and unfortunately it's a bit pants because I was expecting at least some sort of sneak peek at the animation, but they did not release it in the trailer.
Oh, boo. I watched the recon with the video episodes plus reconstructions of the missing episodes about a year or so ago, because I realized that I'd watched that old VHS tape, The Hartnell Years and The Troughton Years, but I don't think Reign of Terror was on those.
No, it wasn't.
And so the Reign of Terror surviving episodes were literally the only footage of the old series that I had not actually seen.
Right, yes, I think I'm similar, because I have not watched The Reign of Terror. So it's one of the few things that I haven't actually seen. Not that I've really minded.
It's not bad. I mean, people say it's a comedy story. I wouldn't have called it a comedy story. It's not really funny, but
we know what Doctor Who fans are like with comedy.
Well, yeah, there's one joke. It's comedy. Kill it.
Yeah, no. Oh god, Doctor Who fans and comedy. So I haven't seen that, and I haven't seen the Ice Warriors either. I'd love them to redo animations of the Ice Warriors.
I'm pretty sure I have seen the Ice Warriors. It's a good story. I quite like it. Although I have noticed that Doctor Who has, if 60s or 70s Doctor Who had to have a tramp, they were always like comedy panto tramps who were always trying to weasel their way out of something, going, "All right, Gov, I just got out of the hospital. You wouldn't kill me, would ya?" Dead.
Is this in the Reign of Terror? I wouldn't have imagined that's in the Ice Warriors.
No, it's in the Ice Warriors. There's a hobo
in that. You're kidding.
No, I'm not.
There's not a hobo.
Yes, there is.
But they're like, there's Surely this, like, I thought they were, like, in some kind of space base or something. No, that.
It's the future when the ice ages come, and there's a scientific base, and there is a scientist who has rebelled from the base and is sort of living as a vagrant, and he lives with this other tramp who's this sort of dumb, whiny comedy tramp who's constantly trying to, like, steal things and weasel his way out of things. There's also one in the war machines. There's one, there's, what is it? Pig Bin Josh.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's the most famous one. Who actually literally says, ooh-ar, ooh-ar.
Can you do the whole thing?
What, the whole thing, which is just, ooh-ar, 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 oh no, ooh-ar, ooh-ar.
Ooh-ar.
I believe that's fairly accurate.
No, he actually says things. It's nonsense. He's mumbling to himself, but he actually has dialogue beyond ooh-ar.
Well, the most distinguishable one is the most embarrassingly ooh-ar. Because I was actually watching the making of Claws of Axos. Because I recently bought the DVD. Which I'll talk about a great extra if you ever want to watch the most awkward half hour to an hour of your life. Which is Toby Haydock, who is lovely, spending a weekend with John Levine.
Ooh. Uh-huh.
Because I don't know if you know, but John Levine has basically got himself this reputation now of being somewhat batshit insane, especially at conventions. He's just a nutbag. Or he was, as Toby Haydock once said, he thinks that he may have turned into a complete nutter. And he's now got this thing where he's got a stand-up comedy routine, which is, as Toby Haydock once put it, it's seen to be believed.
Is this on the DVD?
The stand-up comedy routine's not, but you see some of his jokes, which are just... anyway.
Is this a special edition DVD or the older one?
The special edition DVD. Bum. So you've got to watch this primarily because... I've never seen... Oh, what does it remind me of? It reminds me of those sort of... I think The Simpsons do parodies of it. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. You know, when supposedly someone's being filmed a documentary and they'll go, oh, look, who's this just walked on by? Oh, my God, it's my oldest friend. How are you? You know, it's there's a lot of that. And also, the awkward bits is when John Levine's just talking to random strangers, random old ladies.
Oh, what, and going, do you know me? I used to be in Doctor Who. Do you remember? Please say you remember.
There's a little bit of that as well. It is frankly one of the, and apparently, according to John Levine, that the main family, the unit family, was actually just John, Katie, and John. And Levine, they were the mainstays of, they were the main parts of the family.
Is he cutting the brig out of that?
Yeah, apparently Nick Courtney used to spend, according to John Levine, that Nick Courtney spent more times at the pub, and therefore John Levine was the most important part of the unit family, allegedly.
Yeah, I'd say Nicholas Courtney got wise.
I think maybe this is just one of those things that's in his mind. Apparently, John Levine started off life dead, so, you know, that's a thing. He was actually revived by doctors when he was born, because he was, like, jaundiced and something and dead, or I can't remember what he keeps saying, but...
Seriously, that's rather impressive.
It's interesting that also his father didn't take much to him, and so I think this... His whole life now makes a hell of a lot more sense, that he's always wanted to be entertained, to be liked, to be, you know, appreciated, to be, you know, seen, because he never was before. So, yeah, it's quite an awkward documentary, especially Toby Haydock, who is much better at being a comedian rather than this sort of Mike Wallace-esque 60 Minutes reporter.
Well, I can't wait to see it, although I have to confess I'm not that keen on shelling out my hard-earned pennies for the Claws of Axos twice.
Well, there is that, yes. I was received a gift voucher from the parental units and I just spent it wisely at JB Hi-Fi.
Ah, excellent. Yes, because God knows there's nothing else to buy from JB Hi-Fi except discount bargain bin Doctor Who DVDs.
Well, yes. In fact, funny enough, I also bought the series for a Fringe, which I'm currently making my way through now.
Oh, yeah, you were making fantastic orgasm noises about that.
Yeah, I, because, you see, Fringe, I used to watch it primarily online. I loved the first season. The second season, like, all right, third season, yeah, this is a thing. Season four, oh my god, blah, blah. So, you know, that's, so I'm most excited about it. So, I'm rather glad it's got back to its A game.
Well, yes, I recently heard that Ian Levine is working on a reconstruction of the Dalek Master Plan.
Oh, that's not what I was hoping you were going to say.
Considering that his reconstruction of Shara went down so well with the BBC, not to mention his reconstruction of Planet of Giants, which was a stellar piece of work.
I thought you were going to say other things, like apparently Ian Levine is a Zeppelin.
Or that are you implying that he's lighter than air? I think he's more likely to be some kind of deep sea diving bell.
Picture this deep sea diving bell with some sort of suit on, and just every so often you just go, Ian, what do you think of this? Clonk. I see that's as
everyone
point.
Hates me.
Clonk. That's all he can say, and it's just translated. So yes, Ian Levine,
Ian Levine
is a deep sea diving bell.
Ian Levine's, apart from being a deep sea diving bell, he's planning to reconstruct the Daleks Master Plan. He's released a few demo stills on his Facebook, I think. And so I was kind of curious. He says it's the greatest Doctor Who story ever. So I went and watched the reconstruction, which I've never seen before. I've heard the audio, but, you know, never actually watched it, and it's been so long. It's a really good story. I have to say, I'm a big fan of the Daleks Master Plan, and I'm really looking forward to this recon if we ever get to see it.
Yeah, although if it's anything like his last one.
Well, the pictures make it look like a invasion-style recon, you know, a cartoon style, which was very good.
Okay, well, hopefully it shall be good. I've only seen what the surviving episodes, and I've seen most of the recon of the last episode.
All right, so 2, 5, and 10.
Yeah, and I saw a bit of 12 as well, which I always found, it always deeply fascinated me, because I thought how, with the death of Sarah Kingdom and, you know, the Daleks all sort of exploding, whatever else, and so forth.
It's remarkably gruesome. It's an incredibly gritty Doctor Who story. It's very, well, I gather the tone sort of fits in. That season was a very dark, darkly toned season, but it's not generally what we think of as Doctor Who, having a 12-part pure grit story, although, you know, 7 and 8 were sort of comedy interludes.
Although, I have to say that maybe it's just the era. I remember listening to the audio and watching the recon of the last episode when the Doctor and Stephen, yes. I keep wanting to say Peter Purves.
Peter Purves, does he?
Again, shut up. Gets into the TARDIS, and the Doctor's like, oh, well, that's the Daleks all sorted out. I always think that's a bit, really? Really? You're saying it like that?
I don't think he said it out of character or anything.
It just seemed a bit sort of, you know, oh, well, wasn't that a marvelous adventure? No, a whole bunch of your friends died.
I do especially love seeing Peter Butterworth come back as the Monk, though. The Monk is really one of my favourite Doctor Who characters. I cannot describe to you my love for this character, and I really wish we'd seen more of him at some point.
If the Monk was brought back now, who would you want to play him?
Oh, well, the BBC tends to cast sort of young, sexy actors like John Sim and David Tennant. I'm trying to think who could play him. Why? Who would you pick?
I don't know. I would love them to go with an older.
No, Ricky Gervais. Come on, that is perfect. He's the closest actor you'll find to Peter Butterworth.
You know, which it's a bit of a time thing, you know. I'm just going to screw up our time.
That's Peter Griffin. What the hell are you talking about?
Shut up. My impressions are legendary.
But no, the Monk is always sort of weaseling his way out of things, you know. Oh, well, I'll just be going now since I've done everything for you.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think if there was someone. I suppose people like the monk and the Rani would never be brought back because it's like one Time Lord too many.
Yeah, well, especially now that it's hard to bring Time Lords back because of the continuity.
Yeah.
And I gather that the Doctor at one point says that he knows there are no other Time Lords because he'd know, he'd be able to feel it.
Yeah.
Which is why when the Master comes back, he's human. He's put his Time Lord thingy-bob into a watch.
But that's not to say that other Time Lords couldn't have done that or been in a pocket universe. No, that's true.
Or been in... Yeah, parallel universe was what I was about to say, like the Doctor thought the Corsair was.
Yeah.
They'd find a way, I know that.
Now, there's an interesting bit of trivia for you. According to Neil Gaiman, in that particular story, he had to obliterate a line, and I think it's quite good that that Moffat got him to erase this line. Neil Gaiman wrote something along the lines that the Corsair was the inspiration, the Doctor says that the Corsair was one of his inspirations to leave Gallifrey.
I heard that.
Yeah, to which Stephen Moffat said, no, because we can't, it should be more, that would sort of, I suppose, in a way, eliminate the mystery, and I agree with that.
Yeah, that was a good choice.
Yeah.
But I like the Corsair as a character, I wish we'd got to see him or her. But
like him as a character, someone who never appeared ever.
Well, the way he's described as he's described as one of the good old boys you go down to the pub for a pint with. You know, he sounds like a hellraiser. He sounds like a fun character, and I wish we'd seen him.
Is there other characters that I really much you'd love to see? Would you love to have seen the terrible Zoden?
I would. I would love to have seen the terrible Zoden, but I would dearly love to see the monk come back.
Yeah.
Peter Butterworth, I read this, Peter Butterworth was actually a bit of a war hero. He'd done something in the Second World War, like escape from a prison camp or something. And they were making a film of those events. And they decided against casting Peter Butterworth as himself because he wasn't good looking enough.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
That's always...
Isn't that depressing?
Well, yes, but that reminds me of the Simpsons episode, the Homer Simpson story, where they have other people playing Homer. A portrait of an ass grabber.
Which episode was this? I don't remember.
Oh, it's the one where Homer has the gummy Venus de Milo that gets stuck on the butt of the babysitter, and he's accused of being a sexual...
Oh, yeah.
A molester. And so... And now the Homer Simpson story, portrait of an ass grabber. Ooh, portrait. Sounds classy. But yeah, Peter Butterworth, yeah, I can't think of anything else.
I've only ever seen him in comedy roles. Doctor Who, where he's the monk, and Carry On movies, where he's Peter Butterworth.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but I mean, that's his strength. I wouldn't have really... I imagine he'd be very good at...
Well, you say it's his strength, but you know, you haven't seen him in a serious role. He might be very good at them.
Well, probably. Usually, comic actors are actually much better at serious roles because they understand the emotions better than dramatic actors. Although, having said that, though, Timothy Dalton's excellent at comedy, so, you know, I don't know.
Really? When did he do comedy?
I'm thinking of Hot Fuzz.
Oh, yes. Yeah, I forgot that.
So, it's all about good timing, I suppose. Yeah. Next time, obviously, we'll be talking about, hopefully, one of us may have got the Reign of Terror. I think it's coming out soon, isn't it?
Yeah, in the next month or so, I think. I'm looking forward to that.
Well, yes, well, hopefully we'll get that, as well as any other DVD release. Hopefully you get a chance to see that awkward documentary at some point.
Well, we'll come back next time with the Reign of Terror, and I really want to watch those two Great Intelligence Second Doctor stories.
Yes.
To see...
I might have
exactly what the deal is, because I don't remember them very well at all.
I might have to go and look at those too. But in the meantime, I've been David Innes.
I've been St. John Karp.
And this was the Carnival of Bastards. Take care and have fun. Clonk!